The only way to do the shit you want to do is by doing shit you don't want to do. Probably one of the most versatile jobs I could probably throw myself in.
You're tuned into Nonverbal, a Radio 1190 news team show about the parallel growth of pot and Colorado during the first 10 years of legal recreational cannabis. All right, hold on. Wait, we gotta talk about, we gotta talk about how we got legalized, because they had to plant seeds in people's heads before they got to planting seeds in the ground. So how'd we get legal weed?
Legislature.
That's right. Legislature. Essentially, Colorado and Washington State legalized recreational marijuana back in 2012. Back when I was in third grade, Coloradans were getting their first doses of legal pot because of Amendment 64. It was added to the Colorado Constitution. Amendment 64 was the end of a drawn-out push for legal weed. That's a long time from the initial legalization of medical marijuana in Colorado back in the year 2000. It made sense for Colorado to pick up the revenue stream. And in its 10 legal years, the first state with legal pot changed alongside the culture. So we gotta talk about it. We live far away from stuff coming out of the ground that finds itself in our homes. Retail items like produce travel miles before they connect with our local stores. And pot is no exception. Starting this podcast meant going out to rural Colorado to get a glimpse of growing life. One second, I was in Zoom class. The next, I was Zooming through miles upon miles of prairie land to meet Mason Duarte, the voice you heard at the top of the show. Most importantly of all, he's the head farmer and co-founder of Mile High Organics, a hemp-growing company based out of Strasburg, Colorado.
It's probably one of the most versatile jobs I could probably throw myself in outside of, you know, maybe being a special forces operator in the military. Like, it's like, you know, it is fascinating in that sense, especially as the business scales. I mean, you know, and we grow hemp, CBD, like we're a competitor to pharmaceutical companies. You know, we're the leading product that can basically be a source of competition for anti-inflammatory medications that cause, you know, heart disease and the number one killer in America.
So right off the bat, one thing is clear. Mason and other farmers, cultivators, you name it, believe in the stuff. That's important. That's the foundation of an industry, and to Mason's point, rivaling Big Pharma takes the wholehearted belief that your stuff works. That pride that what you're doing is a true-to-life alternative, not snake oil. Thus, it's no surprise why Mason believes in CBD, THC, cannabis, and hemp. He grows the stuff. All right, so outside of pride, we had to know what makes a grower a grower. We got a cultivator from Magnolia Road, the infamous Boulder dispensary, to speak with us. He goes by the name Charlie Butcher, and he emphasized that growers may need degrees, but they definitely need to be in the know.
I'm not saying like you have to have a degree in horticulture, because I don't really think you do. There's a lot of people I've known that have cultivated for years that just learned it by going out and self-taught. But I think also, it's kind of like an indicator that maybe you put a lot of time into research on how to, you know, take plants through various stages. You know, the other part of growing and people will kind of tend to forget is the aftercare, you know, that they don't teach you that in college. A lot of these things you're going to have to like go out and research, like drying and curing. Integrated pest management, that's another important thing, because eventually you're going to run into some insects that want to eat your plants as much as you do, or consume as much as you do. But no, I don't know if you really have to be a horticulturist to do this.
That's what commercial growers are looking for right now. They're looking for specialized people to work for their specialized companies.
You really have to specialize, I think, as a smaller business. That's what some of these companies that you see out there, they've done, they've survived. They kind of got in a little earlier too. Green Dot, places like that, they've kind of marketed themselves as like specialty cannabis. And then if you look into more of your larger cultivations, they're more about volume and filling up the shelves, you know, with not necessarily like bad cannabis, but it's just not, it's like the difference between like your microbreweries versus like Bud Light.
Again, that's Charlie Butcher, Magnolia Road. But it hasn't always been the way that he just described.
Oh, this industry's a joke. Especially after a market crash. You have something kind of like, you know, it's directly comparable to the dot-com boom, for instance. It's something where you have this massive rise of all these companies that don't really do anything. They're just riding off the hype of, you know, the industry as a whole. By the time 2020 rolled around, the market, you know, completely crashed. 95% of farmers quit. And nobody really appreciates what CBD does. Or I'm speaking more towards the retail side of things. You know, if we kind of get in the industrious side, that's the thing, is like there's only so many of us left. Like, it's gotten to the point where, like, you know, I know everybody who supplies every retail brand, you know, like I know the biggest processors in the country, I know the biggest growers in the country. It's shrunk to the point of like there's almost no way to avoid it. Like, you know everybody.
All right, Mason is saying 10 years ago weed was a bustling thing for a reason. People and our government wanted the money, so the regulation was less fierce. But now, growers and cultivators alike have to jump through hoop after hoop.
This obviously, when this business exploded, it attracted a lot of different types of people. People who had never cultivated before, people who were planning on making rather large corporations. But it was a slow build up to that. A lot of this had started off by people who just lived in the area, got an opportunity to get a license. It was a lot more fun back then because it was new and exciting. There wasn't the regulations, like the testing has completely changed. And when it first started, not that I'm saying anything bad about like testing or anything, but it started off with just potency. And then, you know, then they started realizing, well, we also need to test it for, you know, microbials, make sure, you know, people aren't smoking mold and stuff like that, or consuming it through edibles. And then, you know, a few years ago, it was even 4 years ago, they started looking into heavy metals.
Let's recount. 95% of growers have up and quit. Weed testing has led to further and further stringency on what can go on store shelves. And specialization isn't making those shelves widely available. Is there anything that we're missing?
40% of the cultivation licenses have disappeared out of Colorado.
All of that stringency and fear adds up in dollar amounts. Cannabis has been legal for 10 years in Colorado, and within the last 3 years of its lifespan, it's found itself in an over $500 million hole. Seriously. Total revenue from 2021 to 2023 has dropped from $2.23 billion to $1.53 billion within the state of Colorado. All that together makes it hard for people like Mason, the people that are rivaling pharmaceutical companies with CBD. Because the biggest of those pharmaceutical companies are raking in over $50 billion on a national scale. That said, it's pruning time for growing firms. Either you grow and cultivate a product that people buy, you get bought up by a larger firm, or you drop like the rest of them. The same is true for dispensaries, but we'll get to that another time. So what are the genetics of a surviving weed firm? What's the profile? The chemistry of a grower that's making ends meet. Well, it's just that. Within 10 years of weed growing, a good Colorado grower is someone who just has the best bud in town. They get a few customers. But the savviest of marijuana business people are the ones who flip the chemistry on its head.
It was just CBD, you know, everybody hopped in for CBD. And man, it was, people were printing money when this whole endeavor started. People were literally printing money. They were selling a kilo of isolated CBD for as much as a kilo of cocaine, quite literally. I mean, you could trade if you wanted. This interesting thing happened is like once the market collapsed, like people started getting really ingenuitive, like what can we do here? And that's when they developed the Delta 8. And the Delta 8 has been something that has swept the country. These products are flooding the market at a scale of billions of dollars. And then that transitioned, right? They pushed a little bit further to hemp-derived Delta 9. Now, this is almost indistinguishable from regular Delta 9. Now, a real guy would, you know, be able to sort out the difference, but these guys are taking hemp and they're making marijuana. they sell it for cheaper than marijuana, right? So move it into the retail side. You can go to a dispensary, you know, somewhere and you're buying hemp-derived stuff. You have no idea. Mm-hmm. That's because they'll buy it for $600 rather than $1,000 or $1,200 for a liter, right? And then they more or less double their margins. So now the business is able to survive, you know, and it's turning this massive flux of all this hemp-derived D9. They're finding all these loopholes. And it's funny that the hemp market is like filling all these loopholes in. We had no idea. We never expected it. It just kind of came out of nowhere. Now it's like you have this multi-billion dollar industry of reactors. It's all these laboratories around the country buying, you know, stuff that, you know, like stuff that like we make, you know, and they react it to Delta 8, sometimes to Delta 9. And the Delta 8 stays as Delta 8, but if it goes to Delta 9, then, you know, there's a good possibility it's going to find its way into the marijuana market.
Knowing what we know, let's talk genetics again. For this last bit, I don't even think Mason realized he was telling me something so unique.
That's the thing, you know. I'm honored to talk to a potential multi-billionaire.
Well, I mean, you know, that's not that as much money, you know. Go to the U.S. Treasury, you know, see how much money that is. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, at the end of the day, you can grow to the size of Apple, but you're still at the whim of, you know.
Well, how's money fit into your mind, into your whole, like, life equation then, if that's how you view a billion dollars?
Money's just a byproduct. It's just a measure of the value you add to the market. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you really want to become more valuable than money. That's what, you know, that's what the goal should be.
More valuable than money. The object of the loophole reactors in the hemp-derived weed market is to try and print money. But Mason and Charlie both spoke to me about becoming the thing that people need. When you're a grower, you first choose the kind of grower that you want to be. Our grower and cultivator friends said they're the guys taking care of and selling the plant that people seek out to use and de-stress, becoming the point of recovery in those people's lives.
You know, because there's a dad and two sons that run the farm over there. Mm. They're all wheat farmers. Yeah. And the dad is, you know, I don't know, it's got to be 85 or something, but he puts, you know, he uses CBD daily. Like, he can't function without CBD, you know. Mm-hmm. My grandpa has, you know, horrifically terminal cancer. Like, he was supposed to die 3 years ago. And he doesn't take any medication except for a blood pressure medication and a very, very strong CBD tincture that he takes every day. Now, that could be total baloney. Who knows? Like, that could have nothing to do with his survival. But, like, it is certain times like that where, like, you know, he feels fine. He lives fine. He moves fine. Yeah. The guy has terminal cancer, you know? Like, he was supposed to die years ago.
With that, thanks for tuning in to Season 1, Episode 1 of the Nonverbal Podcast, a show put together by Radio 1190's news team. I've been your host and producer, Jack Armstrong. Our fact checker and executive producer is Leon Spies. Our music composer is Roberto Esteban Vera. Our visual director is MJ Sykes. Keep that communication nonverbal.